This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Welcome to Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. We are so glad you're here to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families. So sit back, relax, connect, and enjoy. All right, welcome everyone. We're so excited. Sorry for the delay. I literally was stuck in traffic on the 5 in San Diego for the Del Mar Fair. Still going on. Welcome, everyone. We today are so excited to introduce Sandy Ansari, and she is here to represent her company, which is so amazing. She works with kids with social difficulties and different things, and we're going to talk deeply about that today. Welcome, Sandy.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I know. Isn't it awesome?
Yes.
So today, tell me a little bit about your work. Tell me what it's called, and first of all, how people can contact you.
Well, I'm on Psychology Today.
Awesome.
And you can, you know, Google my name or Center for Educational Therapy. And
I noticed there was a few of them. Do they look for Center for Educational Therapy in San Diego?
Yeah.
There was
yeah.
a few in LA, and there was a few across the country.
Yes. So okay. I'm the only one in San Diego.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
All right. And you're just right up the road, too.
Yes, Mission Valley.
Mission yeah, Valley.
Pretty central.
Awesome. And so they can find the phone number, too, to reach you and contact you there?
Yes, they can.
Oh, fabulous. Okay. Why don't we, can we give the phone number over the podcast?
Sure.
Okay.
619-577-1210.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. Well, tell me a little bit about what you do with the kids and parents and families that you work with in your... Or tell me a little bit about your background as well.
Okay. So I started out as an educational therapist about 15 years ago and got a really rich understanding of how children learn in traditional and non-traditional environments.
Wow.
And from there, I advanced to learning more about families and children who have just social and emotional difficulties.
Okay.
So, you know, like as a marriage family therapist, I was trained to learn about development and family systems. So that's how I, you know, went from one area of expertise to another. And then now I'm sort of trying to bridge the gap.
Amalgamate that all together.
Yes.
Awesome. Well,
create
tell
a
me
hybrid.
A little bit about what's non-traditional. When you mentioned that, what does that mean? The non-traditional types of learning or traditional types of learning? What would be the non-traditional types?
Well, you know, not everybody is designed to go to school in the same setting. I mean, they
yeah.
have different learning styles, different learning temperaments, sometimes a learning disability. Oftentimes we have children that are gifted.
Right.
And they want to advance and excel in a different rate.
Yeah.
And so they need a non-traditional environment.
So our mainstream schools doesn't always accommodate that.
Yes, it can't because they need to be in an environment where they can thrive and you can tailor the education.
Yeah.
You can tailor the academics and the social emotional environment for them.
We need a lot more schools like that in this country.
Yes, we do.
Or around the world.
Yes. We're getting there. I think right now with the social emotional, the Consortium for Academic Social Emotional Learning, they're now taking understanding of how to build emotional intelligence into the classrooms, even into public schools.
I love it.
We're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Now, the consortium, is that a national company or is that?
It's national, yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And what's it called again?
Consortium for Academic Social and Emotional Learning.
Wow. Can parents get involved?
Parents can get involved and schools can get involved. So it's all over the country. And a lot of schools are trying to get on board, but there's not a whole lot of evidence-based practice just yet for how to train social emotional intelligence in the classroom.
Right.
So teachers have to become, you know, more trained and
right.
schools and school climate change has to sort of take take the lead. But I think with all of that's been happening in the country.
Well, charter schools are, and San Diego is really an innovator for that. There's a lot of homeschooling conversion programs and things where they're doing partial in class and then they're doing partial at home. I know Dehesa's doing that, and a couple of other charter schools are making combinations to accommodate those specific areas, social and emotional intelligence, emotional wisdom, even areas of mindfulness too, meditation, looking within, yoga, all of that starting to come into the school environment.
Yes, it's very exciting, and I'm happy to see this both in traditional and non-traditional environments.
Oh, great. Okay. So thank you for clarifying what that really meant about non-traditional. Mm-hmm. So tell me, when you're meeting with families and you're meeting with the kids, what kind of kids come and see you? What kind of parents look you up and determine whether the work that you're doing is good for them and their family?
Well, there's certainly a range.
I bet.
We get anywhere from a parent that is worried about his or her child not having a support system or not having a group, a subgroup at school. For example, I had a teen girl who was in a non-traditional environment, and it was a small school. And so she's, you know, going through puberty, and she had a small group of friends, and that group of friends, began to kind of withdraw from her because she has some quirks. And this was absolutely devastating. And, you know, I think the depression kicks in and the feeling of being isolated kicks in, and then the academics drop as a result.
Absolutely.
So the mother contacts me and wants to know if I have a support group for her teen daughter.
Yeah.
And so that quickly, you know, gives her a sense of belonging, and then we can address the difficulty that she's facing at school so that she can come back from a strength perspective and she can keep her academics up and she can feel like there is a place for her and that the group that she's with at my facility will support her in being able to get reintegrated back into her relationship with those peers or finding another group of peers.
Yeah.
So that's one example.
Yeah.
In addition to obviously consulting with the parent and helping her to him or her to better, you know, help her child. So.
Right. Well, share with me a little bit about what are some of the quirks? What would parents notice would be some of the difficulties that they're experiencing? Because I know at the end of the day, the child comes home and they say they're having difficulty in school and that's not working out, or their teachers are complaining about them, or they hate school, and yet the school has no idea why they hate school and all of those things. What would be some of those indicators that parents could see to say, oh, this is a quirk, this is a situation, and this is what I can identify to support my child in, and then getting outside help and resources like you?
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, parents come to me or a therapist or a psychologist when things have gone awry.
Right.
So it's oftentimes after there's been a kind of storm that they then seek help.
Okay.
So I typically hear that, you know, they're either having, you know, maybe test anxiety.
Uh-huh.
Or they're unable to get their homework done in time. They're playing video games too much with their friends at home. Or maybe they're not sleeping at night.
Okay.
They're fighting with their younger, older sibling a lot.
Right.
They're kind of trying to, you know, they stay in their room too long. And the parents are at their wit's end.
So a level of disengagement.
A level of disengagement or... You know, you'll hear parents say that they got complaints from the classroom teacher, that, you know, the third grade teacher is upset that the classroom's being disruptive and, you know, the young man's not getting he's not staying on task.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole range of stuff. So
right. We
have to then go in and find out if there is a cognitive issue, if there's a social emotional issue. Or if there's a parenting issue, or if there's actually something going on in the school, if the school environment is not doing a good job of supporting the child. Sometimes in the playground, you know, you don't know what could be going down in the playground.
Right.
There could be all kinds of teasing and bullying that, you know, the naked eye cannot see.
Yeah.
And so that's something that needs to be addressed. And how is it going to be addressed?
Yeah.
You have to investigate.
Right. Right. So that's really neat. So you look at those three different factors. You look at how what the child's experiencing in their own experience, then what the parents are experiencing, and then how the school is experiencing it, and then how all three of those interrelate with each other. And then on all the different levels of cognitive, social, emotional, and or temperaments and mm-hmm. or cultures and family values or school values or even the child's values of how that impacts how they're relating.
And the parent's reflective capacity is key.
Yeah.
So how can the parent reflect on what's going on? That's where we need to really get most data is from how the parent is observing all of this. And unfortunately, psychologists and clinicians or even child advocates aren't familiar with getting down and dirty and really going in the trenches and observing what's happening mm-hmm. in the playground, mm-hmm. in the classroom, in the family home. And one way that I try to understand what's going on and collect data is also by providing social skills groups. Mm-hmm. So one of the benefits of having children in my group is that I get to actually observe them in the here and now of their social experience. Mm-hmm. And from there, I can gather a lot of data on how it is that they're being perceived by other peers.
I see.
As opposed to just hearing it through hearsay or having the classroom teacher tell me or having the child tell me or having the parent tell me what the symptoms are.
Right.
So it gives me an opportunity to really, really see, you know, firsthand what is going wrong in the social interaction.
Right.
And even if the problem is not social,
right,
you can see a lot by just watching how the child is talking,
right,
self-regulating, playing, brainstorming. When you watch a child socialize and play, you can learn about their entire brain functioning.
Absolutely.
From how it's being observed externally by others.
Yes.
And from there, we can extrapolate.
Yeah.
So this is what I love about running groups is that I get so much data that I can then provide for the parents and the classroom teacher.
So you do group therapy work or group work with the kids and and then you also do one-on-one with the family, so with the child and the parent?
Well, it depends on what treatment plan I feel is optimal.
Okay.
Sometimes they just need to come to group and they need a sense of belonging and they need a support system and they need to experience a kind of playstorming activity so that they can stimulate their brain and their body and their whole cognitive, social, emotional system on a regular basis with a facilitator.
Yeah.
You know, because in the playground, there's no facilitator.
Right.
So there,
it's a free for all.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that could be difficult. But if there's somebody that's has a high reflective capacity and can help bridge the gap between certain play functions,
right,
then it's optimal play.
Yeah.
And socialization. So you want to optimize and give them a positive experience.
Yeah.
So I sometimes feel like that's all they need is they need to come to group and, you know, do the playstorming exercises.
Can you explain a little bit about that, playstorming? What does that mean?
Playstorming is a simple yet sophisticated model. I got this from attending a lot of group relations, experiential group relations conferences myself as an adult.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so essentially a group of people are in a room and they're to have nothing else to do but to be in the here and now with each other.
Right.
We're too often on task.
Yeah.
So we don't experience other people in the here and now as much.
Right.
So I went to several of these experiential group relations conferences to understand how groups operate and how individuals take up roles in groups.
Yeah.
And, you know, a group is like an organism, really, and with different heads.
It sure is.
And so
and different duties.
Yes. And it's too unconscious.
Yes.
We don't, you know, you're taking on the role of interviewer and I'm being interviewed. And so you and I are both in role right now.
Yeah, right.
And so, but this happens very organically in groups with adults.
Yeah.
And there is nothing out there that actually works with group relations with children.
Right.
So I felt like the model that they're using for adults has to be adapted to children, because children are in groups actually more often than adults are.
They really are.
They're in the classroom. They're on the playground. They're in a whole school, and they can see, you know, groups unfold constantly.
Right.
And they have to be sort of recruited to take on a certain role in the school.
Right.
You're that girl, you know. So playstorming is a combination of brainstorming and playing.
Wow.
And so play, standing for process, learning, authored by youth.
Wow.
So that's the experiential part, is that they are learning through experience, through the process of the experience. And they are self-authorizing themselves to co-create with the group.
That's beautiful.
So if sometimes I've even noticed their children who have been in group for a little while, their comprehension level goes up.
Wow.
Their receptive and expressive language goes up. Their writing skills improve.
Yeah.
Because they are using their whole brain and their whole body to author something.
Yes.
And then
A-U-T-H-O-R.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
So they learn.
So they're writing their own script. They're writing their
own narrative.
Yes.
They're creating a narrative with the group.
Wow.
And so at the end, we reflect on what they produced.
Yeah.
And so I often ask them, what was your story that you created?
Yeah.
With your rest of your peers.
Right.
And it's completely spontaneous.
It's organic.
Just
unfolds.
So they just know that the most important thing for them to do is to play with one another and to create something.
Yeah.
And I often ask them, were there characters? Was there a beginning, a middle, an end to what you produced with your peers? And so it gets them to interact with their environment.
Yeah.
So that they are not only creating something that came out of them, but it's also something that came out of the group.
Wow.
And you really do have to use your entire brain.
Yes.
But in a completely playful fashion, to the point where you don't even know you're doing it.
Right.
So I have to ask them at the end to write out or narrate what they created or what they were thinking and feeling as they were creating it.
Yeah.
And what they noticed in the group and the different roles that their peers took up.
Yeah.
They come up with the most novel material that they themselves did not think they had the capacity to create.
Yeah. Wow.
So that's the playstorming aspect.
I love it. I love it. And that's really neat, because that offers them different levels of perceptual awareness. Mm-hmm. So they step into each other's roles. They step into their own roles. They start to see a bigger picture. So they have a lot of different, that's fantastic.
And you'd be surprised that even a five-year-old could understand that they are co-creating.
Right.
Some children could be older, but they're having a harder time.
Yeah.
And that's, again, the data that I get. I get to understand, okay, so this child is having a really hard time with higher order thinking skills.
Right.
They're having a hard time symbolizing. They're rigid with the rules.
Right.
They're inflexible.
Right.
Or they want to control the play.
Yeah.
Or they want to be the main person that creates the rules of the play.
Yeah.
And so this is where we find the breakdown.
Okay.
And it's no wonder the child's being teased at school or being casted out or being, you know, sort of is isolated and their academics is dropping, is because they're hitting a social emotional roadblock when it comes to how they are interacting.
How they're relating to themselves and then how that relates to others.
Yes. So sort of the cognitive flexibility needs to improve, for example, and then that becomes the primary goal for me, is to really work on that and support the family. So then this takes me to the overall treatment plan. So they might need to be in group and need to see me one-on-one so that I can help synthesize what it is that they're experiencing and give them specific tools so that they can enhance their playstorming capacity when they go back into the group.
Exactly.
And if parents want to get that data from me as well, and they want to improve the reflective functioning at home,
yeah,
then they see me maybe once a month. I mean, they could see me as frequently as they would like, but not everybody has the time to, you know, have a session, come to group, come to one, bring their child to one-on-one, and come to weekly parenting sessions. But it is like the optimal way of
to really move through a specific conflict or problem.
Yes.
Okay.
So I will.
And what age groups of groups do you see?
Well, any age group that is able to play.
Okay.
You know.
So 4 years and up?
4 years and up. Okay. And it depends
on. Do you see young adults too? Teenagers?
I see teenagers and I do see young adults. So if they haven't, you know, gone away to school.
So pre-college probably.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And obviously with young adults, the play storming is a little bit different. But, I mean, they're not actually playing with toys per se.
Right.
But they are sitting in different chairs and they're taking on certain roles. And they're engaging in debate and discussion and spontaneous talk.
Okay.
And this is different than the common social skills group that's out there.
Right.
Because there's too often clinicians are cookie cutting specific social skills that they want to teach, have their child learn.
Right.
And so they might come in and, you know, their parents have a list of things that they do need to work on.
Yeah.
I need to make more eye contact.
Right.
And I need to not interrupt as much.
Right.
And
But those are mostly parental perceptions too, and not necessarily the child's perceptions.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we create a spontaneous, experiential, here and now play storming exercise, whether it's with a 4-year-old or a 19-year-old, you're going to get that understanding of what it is that's the breakdown there for them.
Wow, that's fantastic. So tell me a little bit about the parents. What do you do to support the parents in your process?
That could be very complicated, but
probably, right? Depends on the gamut, right?
So I have a simple explanation to what's complicated, but I think about where they are on a reflective function scale.
Okay.
And I'm using a specific evidence-based model where based on an initial interview, I get an understanding of the reflective capacity that a parent has. So they're, if they're on a scale of 1 to 10, they're at a 4 based on the way they answer on how they relate to their child, then I know that I need to work them up to a 5 and a 6.
I see.
I'm not going to try and work them up from a 3 to a 10 or even talk to them at that capacity.
Yeah.
So it's really getting the parent to go from a reflective function of 3 or 4 or 5 up a few notches.
Right.
So that they can use the right language to relate to their child and to mentalize their child, to be able to put themselves in their child's shoes and to understand their child's current developmental state and limitations.
Right.
Because of older parenting styles and
that's a very good way to put it.
dogmatic or disciplinarian parenting styles from you know,
long time
10,
ago.
20, 30, 40, 50 years ago and back, there's still that sort of ghost, you know, kind of talking down into the parent's ear that, he's back talking or he doesn't want to play with me anyway. And he keeps on not wanting to, do his chores. He doesn't like to listen, you know. And so they sort of think in like black and white. And so I help them understand where the child's at developmentally.
Right.
Maybe they have asynchronous emotional development. They're bright. They can understand things very intellectually, but social emotionally they're not there yet. So the parent is forgetting that although the child has a very good vocabulary, that doesn't mean that they can synthesize
what the meaning behind that vocabulary is.
Or they might be acting out or communicating something nonverbally. And so once I give the parent an understanding of what's really going on in the child's mind and how they're perceiving things, then that really releases the parent from being as frustrated.
That's correct.
And when they're not as frustrated, then they can reflect better.
Yes.
And automatically their reflective functions go up.
Yes.
And then they can do things like, you know, take better care of their child's eating habits and, you know, get to appointments on time, and they're feeling better as a parent.
Right. And so we move away from blame. Yes. And we move into co-creating with the child.
Right, right. And that is very hard.
Yes.
It is a hard thing to do because we have our old rigid patterns of thinking about how children are supposed to grow and learn and develop and what
Correct.
Discipline is, what boundaries are,
yes.
and how to not treat your child like an adult with adult ideologies, which is so different.
Right.
You know, parents are not taught to understand child development.
Right.
I'm often shocked
yes.
that there's nothing out there that supports parents to understand their child's development. I mean, month to month,
yes.
there's a different developmental milestone.
Yes, there is.
Every month, the child is at a different developmental stage.
And it's not just about physical activities of daily living. It's also about cognitive growth, emotional growth,
yes.
even spiritual growth
right.
in different ways.
And morality.
Then, and relational growth, and all of that changes and shifts.
Mm-hmm.
It's even changing and shifting earlier and earlier now.
Mm-hmm.
I think as the information age is coming on, because we have more expectations of what it is they're supposed to learn, assimilate, and grow with. And then a lot of times, too, when we unsuppress children, actually some of their milestones get achieved sooner than they did in the past because we let go of a lot of suppression, punishment, and forms of you know, don't speak up at the dinner table when the adults are talking, or the other forms of suppression that we might be doing unconsciously
mm-hmm.
that we don't recognize is happening in the household or in the school.
Yes, out of worry oftentimes.
Yeah.
Out of worry
yeah.
that my child is going to not learn how to, you know, be socially appropriate.
Yes.
And so I need to nip this in the bud right now.
Right.
And what ends up happening is the parent-child relationship gets compromised.
Right.
And the child is not going to authorize the parent to reflect with him or her when they are having a situation.
Exactly.
And you don't want to annihilate the relationship.
Right.
And that's again, where I try to come in and
yeah.
support that on a very regular basis, depending on how much support the parent needs.
Right.
So in order to support the child, we really got to support the parents.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's no better way to do it but to actually observe the child
yeah.
firsthand.
Right.
In group.
Right.
I feel like clinicians and psychologists who see the child one-on-one are
yeah.
only seeing 10% of the child.
Right.
And how are you going to know what it is you need to be working on?
Right.
And then the parents are not getting – the parents are in the waiting room.
Right.
Just waiting. Years on end, they bring their child to therapy
right.
in hopes that – they're going to fix the child
right.
Because parent knows that there's something going wrong in the relationship
right.
with the parent.
Right.
And so they feel guilty.
Right.
And so they take the child to therapy so that they could, you know, clear their conscience and they know somebody else is going to fix it.
Right.
And that is just not productive.
No, it's not.
I mean, it can be productive if it's very, you know, activity-based and perhaps the clinician is bringing the parent into the loop on a very regular basis.
Right, right.
And there's a very good understanding of what's happening socially.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, many of the issues either work themselves out because the child is going to go from one developmental
milestones
stage to another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the problem perpetuates because the problem is actually something else.
Yeah.
It's the relationship with the parent.
Yeah.
And perhaps the child then gets their needs met from the therapist.
Yeah.
But then that isolates the parent.
Right.
And then the parent becomes the bad guy.
Right.
And again, that's another, you're adding to the problem.
Right.
Even a clinician can add to the problem.
Right. Rather than unify the family. Yeah.
So this is where I decided to, you know, step away from, you know, the cookie cut clinical work.
Okay.
And, you know, be in the trenches.
Yeah.
Be in the trenches with the parents, be in the trenches with the child, with
yeah.
the children, like
yeah.
on the floor, doing
yeah.
floor time.
Yeah.
And interacting with them and seeing what's happening in the transactions
right.
between two children, even if it's a nonverbal transaction. I'd like to see what's happening.
Right.
There is so much communication that we don't see when we're sitting in our chairs
right.
and our children are sitting below us.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, thank you. That's just
sure.
beautiful. So as a takeaway, knowledge or wisdom or intellectual understanding, emotional understanding, what would you like to say to everyone out there listening to this podcast, either live on Facebook or on the podcast itself at a later date? What would you like to say for parents and children to know that's available? Because I'm not sure really many people understood that this kind of healing, this kind of opportunity for unity and learning how to work through it, it was capable. I mean, I think, like you talked about old styles of parenting and things that happened in the past, I'm not sure parents know, and I'm not sure even children knew back then and are learning now, but what could you say to say that this is available and there's so much innovation and opportunity for growth and for healing that even children who have trouble at school or have trouble with relating to themselves or at home, it's possible to heal these aspects.
Well, whether there's a support system or not, I highly recommend that you spend 20 minutes a day with each child. And it has to be, you know, child-centered. So it has to be a play activity that's their idea. And it's a spontaneous play activity that's their idea. And that you're co-creating something with your child in an experiential way. Much like the playstorming I was describing earlier.
Yeah.
Getting at eye level.
Okay.
Making sure that your volume, your eyes, your body is at the same level as your child.
Yeah.
And kind of counting the flow of interactions.
Yeah.
Almost in your mind, count the back and forths. You know, go for the gleam in the eye. You know, it's like you're trying to create a perfect date with your child.
Yeah.
And you need to do this every night for about 20 minutes. And there's going to be so much resistance at first because parents are thinking that they're doing it right. And then maybe the child doesn't like it and they drop the ball and they say, I don't want to do this. I want to go do something else. Why do you want to do this with me, Mom, right now?
Yeah. But be persistent.
Yeah, be persistent, and you will continue to learn. Your child will tell you what it is that they're liking. Uh-huh. You know, especially if you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
Then that means you're doing something right. So it's not just the child enjoying themselves. The parent does need to get to a point that they're also enjoying that 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Opening and closing like about 60 circles of communication, whether it's nonverbal or verbal, just a flow of interaction.
Yeah.
And I know parents are super busy. And, oh, we have to get through all of our homework first.
Right.
Oh, we have to brush teeth and take a bath and, you know, do all kinds of other things.
Eat dinner and go shopping.
And I need some rest, too. And, you know, I'm at my wit's end. And so it sometimes goes, you know, on the back burner. But I feel like it should be a priority.
Yeah.
Even above homework.
Well, and the fact that you said just 20 minutes is very inviting. Because, right? Yeah. I mean, we can do anything for 20 minutes.
Right.
We really, really can. I'm sure we can fit in 20 minutes. And I really like that idea, too, about putting it a priority over homework, because I have a feeling quite possibly if we do it before homework, maybe homework could be better.
Yeah, there will be less resistance over time.
Yeah.
Because there's so much negative interaction, negative floor time activity,
right?
Play storming. It's like a negative play.
Right.
You know, there's a relating in a sort of toxic negative way, especially when you're doing homework and the child's frustrated and the parent's frustrated and let's just get through this and why aren't you on task? And so that ends up becoming the play storming, but it's not really play. It's like arguing and a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel good at the end. So it ends up taking an hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe longer.
Right.
Just to get them through one worksheet,
for example. Or to get them ready to do homework. I mean, I hear parents talking about that all the time. It takes me 45 minutes just to get them ready. Mm-hmm. But they could have used the 20 minutes with that interactive play process.
Right. They want to play with toilet paper and they want you to wrap them around it, you know.
You can play mommy.
Yeah. That's what they're going to do. I mean, that 20 minutes, you are going to break out of your role as a parent.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a playmate. Yeah. And you're going to let your child lead the play and you're going to co-create something. And that's very hard, you know, to step out of the parent role. I mean, you are the parent at the end of the day, but step out of the role for 20 minutes and try to connect and relate.
Right.
Because it's so hard to remember that you're stuck in a role as a parent and that maybe you're not enjoying yourself as a parent.
Yeah.
why does this not feel good?
You know, right.
Thought I was going to enjoy being a mom or a dad, but I'm just feeling yucky all the time.
Yeah.
And so your child will pick up on this.
Right.
And so they do need you to, you know, take off the hat.
Yeah.
Put it on the shelf.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes and just be a human being.
Yeah.
That's playing with them.
Yeah.
They do need that.
Yeah.
And they need it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to end up sending parents to, you know, the psychiatrist or the nutritionist that ends up saying, well, you need to do this, you need to do that.
Right.
Where they actually need to, on a regular basis, just interact with their child.
Correct. Wow.
I mean, you know, you're supposed to drink a glass of water at 3 o'clock every day.
Right.
You know, that's sort of, or take this pill at this time in the morning.
Right.
You know, you could get a lot more bang for your buck if you just put that on the schedule and relate and play with your child on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You won't need to go to so many doctors. You won't need to hire so many specialists to help you augment, you know, a problem that
right.
you yourself could really work
could
on.
Unwind.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
what a great pearl of wisdom.
Makes
thank
a
you.
Huge difference.
It sure does. Well, thank you for joining us
sure.
today.
Thank
you so much. And if you could tell me again the name of your company and the phone number where people can reach you.
Sure. So Center for Educational Therapy.
In San Diego.
In San Diego, Mission Valley. And my number is 619-577-1210.
And it's Sandy Ansari.
Ansari. Yes.
And you are a...
I'm an educational therapist.
Educational therapist with family therapy background.
Yes.
Yes. I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks,
it was
Ashley.
Wonderful.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Conscious Living here at the Specialty Produce Network. For more information on how to support your lifestyle with the fastest growing resource for conscious families, visit our website at www.centerforconscious.com. That's www.centerforconscious.com. Join us again next week as we get a little bit more conscious and a little bit more centered. And we'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you.